Clinical studies from multiple groups in U.S. and Europe shows that a significant number of patients undergoing revision spine surgery for loosened hardware actually have bacterial growth around the screw, but with no clinical symptoms of surgical site infection. When these bacteria get impregnated, they can lie dormant in the body and not result in early onset infection. When they lie dormant, they continue to hide from our immune system and biofilm formation on the implant. This biofilm now can break at any time. It could be 1 year, 2 years, 6 months. So if they break, they will cause a delayed or late onset response, and we will see it as infection. So delayed infection or late infection. There is a local response where the implant and bone begin to disassociate because of the biofilm. So we are calling this occult infection phenomena. There was no clinical symptom of infection, but there was still bacteria. This occult infection is resulting in implant to fail.
Every day, they slay the dragons of healthcare-acquired infections and dangerous microbial fire breathers. While you may not see them during your next hospital stay, they will be there ensuring the safest possible surgeries by skillfully wielding their disinfecting weapons of mass microbial destruction. They are sterile processing professionals. And this is Beyond Clean, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are pushing the global sterile processing industry forward. Join us every week as we introduce you to the unsung heroes, leaders, and innovators who are fighting dirty around the globe. And now, it's time to go Beyond Clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Akash Agarwal, PhD, who is the Director of Research at Spinal Balance Incorporated and also an adjunct professor of bioengineering at the University of Toledo. Dr. Agarwal is a prolific researcher in the field of preventive and predictive science of spinal pathology and postoperative complications, such as deformity, surgical site infection, hardware failure, and spinopelvic imbalance. Akash holds several national and international patents, and his major interests include translational research with immediate bench-to-bedside applicability. He is an editorial board member for the Journals of Clinical Spine Surgery and Spine. Dr. Agarwal is also an advisory board member for the Center for the Disruptive Musculoskeletal Innovation, or CDMI, under the aegis of the National Science Foundation, or NSF. Mike, this is going to be a great season one. It's going to come on the heels of an interview with Terry McCauley as we closed out season seven. And I'm very much looking forward to talking to Dr. Agarwal about his research.
Yeah, you're right. And we have many times on this show and on social media lamented the just lack of peer-reviewed studies that are specific to sterile processing. And so when we see one of these really high quality, you know, very in-depth articles that are coming out in peer-reviewed journals that are just all about what goes on in our sterile processing facilities every day, and bonus, it includes financial data. Yeah, that's exactly something we want to talk about.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs.
It's 2023 and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. One Tray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case card with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for offsite sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Dr. Akash Agarwal, Director of Research at Spinal Balance Incorporated and an adjunct professor of bioengineering at the University of Toledo. Akash, thank you so much for joining us. And you're going to help us kick off season 8. And what's great about that is we're big fans of data, but even more so, data with some finances attached to it, because I think quantifying the opportunities to decrease healthcare costs associated with reprocessing is a big focus for us. You had a really nice paper on that, and we're excited to kind of get into your particular areas of study today. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for inviting me, guys.
So specifically, you began doing research on the reprocessing, and I'll say, at least for the article that we read, while you had a very global perspective, I think your focus was specifically on spinal implants and pedicle screws. And so I'm just wondering, what drew you to this particular area of study? Why did you end up doing this work?
Well, I'm relatively new compared to everyone else involved in reprocessing, but it was 5 years ago when my mentors approached me to join Spinal Balance, which at that time was a brand new startup from the University of Toledo. At that time, my main field of research was scoliosis and spine biomechanics, and I was not at all aware of how reprocessing is done and the hazards of exposure of implants during spine surgery. But when I found out that these implants are repeatedly reprocessed in bulk, I had to dig in further. So I started with looking into past literature, and then I came across the NIH Scotland letter where they put a ban on reprocessing of implants. It was nothing short of opening a Pandora's box.
Yeah, and that's really amazing. I'm not at all surprised that once somebody started digging in, you kind of probably discovered that there wasn't just a huge amount of research done in this field already. And so it is right for much, much more research to be done. So I'm very grateful for your work. And I wondered if you could just kind of explain, just generally speaking, what those risks and underlying problems are with the conventional reprocessing of those spinal implants are.
So the problem with permanent medical devices in orthopedic is threefold when it comes to conventional reprocessing. One is the risk, the second is the reason, and the third is the responsibility. By risk, I mean the permanent medical devices in orthopedics have a lot of minute surface features, hidden or impermeable interfaces. These could be in sizes of millimeters or even less than a fraction of a millimeter. So naturally, reprocessing is very challenging and hard to truly validate in these devices. For example, how do you separate the components of the medical device to make sure nothing foreign is stuck in there? We don't really use microscope on each and every device, and eventually it will be in the patient body, so there is no room for uncertainty. The second aspect to this is reason. There is no reason for us to repeatedly wash and sterilize single-use devices. They are used once, so they could, you know, we could just stop doing that. And the third aspect of conventional reprocessing when applied to permanent implants is responsibility. We already established that it is by design these implants get contaminated. when repeatedly reprocessed, no matter how you reprocess them. It is a clear case of product liability and is manufacturer's responsibility to deliver a risk-free product. However, from a layman's perspective, an IFU, instructions for use, which cannot be followed, transfers the blame to the hospitals and SPDs. What I mean is, in case of a litigation, blame will be placed on the hospital or the SPD because of the way manufacturer's elaborate instructions for use has been drafted, and an IFU that is never followed.
Akash, this is really critical points that you're making. And we've had commentary on this show in the past. It's very much along these themes. One that you talked about under the risk area was just all the different surfaces. And we love to call that the nooks and crannies, the difficult to clean areas, the difficult to visualize areas. Those are presenting ongoing challenges to the industry. But then, of course, you know, you mentioned the fact that the blame, and I'll go so far as to say the legal responsibility and blame, then falls on the hospital, because the instructions for use, while the formatting for those has been improving in recent years, there's still a lot of room for improvement in having a standardized format. But not only that, just a standardized way of validating that the instructions for use are truly replicatable. And there's a lot of work going on in the industry, especially with Amy, to try different test soils and put a little bit more rigor, I guess, and standardization to that, that maybe we can trust. But in the meantime, you're making a very good point about the single-use device, in that the responsibility lies with the manufacturer, because it's coming into the surgical procedure, it's used once, and there's really no gray area there. So Akash, we actually had Terry McCauley on in season 7, and one of the things that we talked about was around the screw caddies themselves and residues being left behind from manufacturing. So I guess we can't say entirely that the risk is removed in single use. It's just that, to the what you said, that the responsibility lies very directly with the manufacturer. But you've been working extensively on clinical research and studying the extent of contamination with implantable pedicle screws, which really ties in well with last season's interview, and also what the risk may be subsequently with that. So can you just describe some of your important findings in great detail in this area?
For repeated reprocessing, we found a variety of contaminants at the interfaces of the pedicle screws. These results are consistent with past literature and the reports that Department of Health in Scotland received. And I've already explained why it happens, which is these devices have a lot of impervious features and aren't built to be repeatedly reprocessed. The second half of our study, we looked at the effect of exposure these spinal implants undergo in the so-called sterile field. For this study, we ran a multi-center trial and found that the standard exposures that these spinal implants are undergoing always result in accumulation of enough bacteria that results in colonies to form. In contrast, if we simply put a guard around these implants, there was zero bacterial growth. The study provides a level to evidence that intraoperatively guarded or unexposed implants are devoid of any colony-forming bacteria, unlike the implants which are currently used. In addition to our study, which established the precise mode of contamination, that is via repeatedly reprocessing and exposure in the OR, there are complementary studies where surgeons tried to reduce exposure of the implant by elaborate means. For instance, in one study, they changed their glove every single time before accessing each pedicle screw, and consequently, they reduced the infection rate by a measure of 70%. But it increases the effort. It only focuses on one type of exposure, that is touch, and it is a process-dependent criteria. How do you make everyone compliant? So the basic take-home message of our study is to use a pre-sterile, pre-packaged implant to avoid damage done during repeated reprocessing of permanent implants. And inside each of these sterile packs, the implant should be housed in a guard which avoids microbial exposure during live spine surgery or live orthopedic surgery.
So, Akash, you've already mentioned infections. Can you kind of describe for our audience who may not have quite the clinical background, when we talk about infections, how long after a procedure can a patient essentially be at risk for an infection that is related to the screws or the implants that are put inside their bodies?
Sure. Infection after spine surgery happens at a rate higher than 10% and can occur up to 3 to 5 years after surgery. I'm sure you haven't heard this before because reimbursement policies and short-term studies only look at 30 to 90 days after surgery. In reality, post-operative infections could be divided into early onset, delayed onset, and late onset infection. Most people, when they talk about infection, they talk about the early onset infection, which is immediately after spine surgery, and they only constitute up to 50% of all reported infection. Whereas delayed onset infection are late infections occurring from 90 days onwards to a year, and late onset infections are infections which occur after a period of 1 year from the surgery and are the least studied infection. There are a few long-term studies. For example, there is one that studied people after spine surgery, patients after spine surgery, for 6 years and showed that 56 to 18 months is the average SSI detection duration with a total incidence of 10%.
Well, you definitely just blew my mind right there, because I can honestly tell you that both numbers for the infection rate being 10% and, you know, the time delay being upwards of 3 to 5 years in some cases, both of those are numbers that I have never heard before. Those are very scary numbers. And so from a cost perspective, then, what is the cost for a particular infection regarding that's specific to one of these screws?
The total cost of SSI per case could range between $22,000 to $63,000, but there are cases where the SSI was not eradicated during the first revision surgery and they had to do multiple surgeries, so it could cost up to $1 million if you're really unlucky.
And for that cost, I'm assuming that because most of the time the facilities are not looking at, you know, infections that occur past 90 days, I'm assuming that it's the patient who probably ends up eating most of that cost. Is that correct?
Yes. After 90 days, the patient eats up the cost.
Wow. Okay. That's pretty mind blowing right there. And so immediately this becomes a very significant issue, not just from the infection perspective, but also from the financial perspective as well.
90 days is for the University of Toledo. It might be a little different, but again, they only consider it readmission and they will do it free of cost if it's less than those, you know, 90 or 60 days. I'm not sure. It might be different for different hospitals, but for University of Toledo, it's 90 days.
Sure, sure. But it's certainly not 3 to 5 years. I feel pretty good in assuming that. Can you help us understand something? So a term came up during the process of research for this interview, and it was the concept of the occult infection phenomenon. That's kind of a big, scary term. So can you explain to us what that means?
Of course. Clinical studies from multiple groups in U.S. and Europe, including our own ongoing trial, shows that a significant number of patients undergoing revision spine surgery for loosened hardware actually have bacterial growth around the screw, but with no clinical symptoms of surgical site infection. That is, we are not able to diagnose any infection when the patient shows up, but they actually have bacteria around it. To explain in brief, what's happening is when these bacteria get impregnated in the patient, you know, from the contamination we talked about, they can lie dormant in the body and not result in early onset infection. So when they lie dormant, they continue to hide from our immune system and thrive via biofilm formation on the implant. This biofilm now can break at any time. It could be 1 year, 2 years, 6 months. So if they break, they will cause a delayed or late onset response. And, you know, we will see it as as infection, so delayed infection or late infection. Now, instead of a systemic infection response, there is a local response where the implant and bone begin to disassociate because of the biofilm. We call it screw loosening because there was no clinical symptom of infection, but there was still bacteria. So we are calling this occult infection phenomena. So there is a hidden infection, as in occult, but, you know, it's not a full-blown infection. However, this occult infection is resulting in implant to fail.
Here's what's interesting, Akash. We had a conversation with Dr. Larry Muscarella, and one of the things that we had talked about was the concept and difference between transmission and infection. And what it kind of sounds like you're describing with this occult phenomena is that essentially just because something is present, which could be transmitted, it doesn't always result in an infection. Were you able to figure out if antibiotics being given prophylactically, if that has any influence over whether or not this biofilm actually results in an infection?
So that's a good question to ask me at this stage because we just finished a year-long clinical trial. We are continuing it. So what we found is, so other people looked at bacteria around the screw, but they never showed us a picture of, you know, how the biofilm looks like. So we now have pictures of biofilm. And when we were collecting the patient data to understand what are the risk factors, these patients were given all kinds of antibiotics during surgery. But years down the line, they're still having screw loosening and they have bacterial biofilms grown around it. Yeah, we still see biofilm, and they were administered with more than one kind of antibiotics.
So that's fantastic information. So I'm very curious then, based on your research, what are you kind of seeing as the future of spinal surgery?
Depending upon whom you ask, the list is unlimited, like motion preservation technology, regenerative medicine, navigation, AI, and so on. But if you ask me, I see it in terms of what the patient seeks. We already know that they definitely seek safety from risks such as infection or nerve damage during surgery. They don't want any collaterals. However, they also seek results. In other words, they want to know if spine surgery will really fix their problem. Patients today are much more aware and informed that spine surgery may not work for them. Because majority of low back pain is non-specific in nature, we don't really know where the pain originates from. So our field will move towards better patient selection criteria. There will be devices and methods or techniques coming up into regular clinical practice, which will help us identify if a patient is a right candidate for spine surgery. And outside spine surgery, conservative measures and products to tackle low back pain will also be on rise.
So one of our favorite guests on the show in the past has been Dr. Wava Truscott, and you mentioned the term biofilm many times during this interview, and she's somebody that we've had on to talk about biofilms, and we've seen her speak all across the country, including our very own inaugural Beyond Clean conference in Houston, Texas last fall. But when we talk about biofilms, it has to come from somewhere. It has to be formed by some sort of source. And so as you described about biofilms forming on these screws, where is the biofilm even coming from?
So there are two sources. The first one is the OR environment. And the second one is when it's being washed with the soiled instruments and then sent out for drying. So if anything gets stuck when it's being washed, because there are so many impervious surfaces and interfaces, that over time when it's drying and sterilized, it will slowly grow a biofilm. But what we know for sure is that the biofilm does grow from the exposure in the OR, because we have had bacterial colonies grow on these screws. So that is certain. And it's also certain that there is foreign material being impregnated in the interfaces during washing. So I think it's both. And then there is also another thing which is not considered during many validation studies. It's the time. it's not done in one go. It's exposed, then there is some time that gives opportunity for these foreign body to multiply, or you know, bacteria to grow onto non-microbial foreign bodies. So there is exposure in the OR from, of course, the air, whatever flora that is left behind from patients and the staff members. So exposure in the sterile field and exposure, you know, during the SPD process. And then there is time. Time is opportunity, and, you know, it develops over time.
Akash, this has been a very thought-provoking and insightful interview. I'm really glad you came on to pick up where we left off in Season 7 as we begin our next Season 8. Did a great job with your research, and I just want to thank you for sharing your thoughts and your insights and your work with all of our listeners today.
No, I thank you guys for inviting me.
That was Dr. Akash Agarwal, Director of Research at Spinal Balance Incorporated and an Adjunct Professor of Bioengineering at the University of Toledo. And Mike, this whole biofilm conversation is critically important, but it also sort of has me thinking a little bit more about the potential for cross-contamination in decon, just in general, with the washing of instruments, which it's probably fine for instruments that don't get implanted into the human body, although there's really no studies on that. At the same time, the implantable devices, I can see why his research and his mission is to push towards single-use devices in that regard. It makes a lot of sense. It also reinforces why they tell you all of the time that you really should be changing out that ultrasonic fluid in the ultrasonic cleaner on a regular basis too.
Yeah, but I think you hit the nail right on the head. Is there's a lot of areas that just the research hasn't been done. And so particular to this situation, that if somebody like Akash had not done this research, we would just keep doing the surgeries the way that we had always done them, right? The truth is that if we haven't done the research, we don't know. And so maybe there are instances where, you know, sharing the sink water between instruments can result even on stuff that's not implantable. We just don't know. And so I'm very grateful for this type of research that's being done, and I'm very excited for the future of what that might look like for our industry.
Yeah, and the whole occult infection phenomenon is really interesting, especially because it seems like the infection can lie latent or dormant for extended periods of time. And there was a study that was out last year that I remember reading that was talking about the transmission of some sort of prion that might cause, you know, or might influence dementia, et cetera, in spinal surgery, but it wouldn't show up, or Alzheimer's-like symptoms that wouldn't show up, you know, for 20 or 30 years. When you talk about a lack of research, I mean, these are serious longitudinal studies that are very difficult to tie down to a root cause. I got to think that this is not only needed research, but pretty difficult research to do.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're absolutely right. And I don't want to get too far off into left field, but I think the reality is that we have, we in the healthcare industry have inadvertently, in some cases, in some cases probably intentionally, treated that autoclave like a magical box. And the assumption is that anything that comes out of that box is automatically deemed safe. And so where are our infections coming from? And so we try to use a number of different things to handle those infections, including prophylactic antibiotics or, you know, different gowns and drapes and all these different things. And it turns out that we really aren't looking in the right places in the first place. And so that's why I'm really thankful that this research is developing and will continue to develop, because we still have to address the root cause.
Yeah, absolutely. What a great way to kick off season 8. That's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Mike and myself, thank you for listening to this week's edition of Beyond Clean.